guys. Welcome back to another episode on Heinous Beliefs, a true crime podcast where we talk about true crime cases that are influenced by belief systems, especially ones that are harmful to our society. Hi there. I am so glad that you guys are here on episode 20 because this is the last episode for the season. We will be back in January. Just like how we started Heinous Beliefs this year in January, we'll be back next year in January, and it's going to be a whole different podcast. We're going to have visuals. We're going to have so many other things added to the podcast. If you're not subscribed, make sure you are subscribing to Apple Podcasts. If you want extra episodes throughout the break, I'm just going to spontaneously upload some episodes on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions. So if you want some episodes throughout the break, go ahead and subscribe. But the podcast itself is rounding up season one. Season one on Heinous Beliefs is over. Thank you guys so much for sticking around. Thank you so much for clicking play. Thank you for being there for me and sharing the podcast, talking about the podcast, even, you know, giving me feedback. I really do appreciate it. I'm hoping that throughout the break, you guys are still sharing out the podcast and getting other people to listen to it, because this is a bigger conversation, right? It's a conversation that a lot of people are not having. As I host the podcast, I really just didn't realize how frequent these cases were and how many they were and just how brutal they are and how, you know, children have to suffer in these cases, and it's just very heavy. All right, you guys already know I have to do my disclaimer. Listener discretion is advised. This one is a bit heavy. There's a lot of child abuse. There's a lot of child neglect. So if you don't think you can handle that, go ahead and skip this one. All right. Okay, guys, if you're going to be sticking around, you already know what to do. Go ahead and buckle up, get comfy. Get your tea, get your coffee, get your juice, whatever you got going on. Let's get into it. All right, let's rewind to the early 1980s in Gainesville, Florida. Now, Gainesville might sound like an average southern college town, home of Florida Gators, tailgates, frat houses, all that. But tucked away out in the dusty outskirts down a little dirt road where nobody really paid much attention stood this raggedy white house. And trust me when I tell you, it looked like nothing. Nothing was going on. Like just another old rundown country home, but inside of it, inside was a whole different world. A prison dressed up like a church, a house of horrors hidden in plain sight, and no one knew what was happening. This was Anna Elizabeth's young stage, because before she became Mother Anna in Florida, she was just Anna Elizabeth Woods, born in 1941 in Mississippi, and she was raised up in one of them strict old school fire and brimstone Pentecostal black families. Y'all know the type of churches where, you know, the women had to cover themselves from head to toe, no makeup, no jewelry, and how dare you question anything, okay? Don't question nothing. Don't question your husband, your preacher. Don't even question God. How dare you, right? Hell, you did not even question your mama or your daddy. Right? You had to obey everybody. Spiritual authority was everything. She carried out the same religious energy with her into her adulthood, but somewhere along the way, it twisted. Whether it was pride, trauma, mental illness, I'm not really sure, but something snapped. By the late 70s, Anna had married Robert Young and bounced down to Florida. She kind of hopped down to Florida with them. She's married, of course, why not? And that's where she started rebranding herself as Mother Anna. She was claiming that she had this divine vision, spiritual powers, and direct conversations with God himself. Does that sound a bit familiar, guys? Right? We know where we are, right? It's the cult playbook 101. So she sets up this so-called ministry, the House of Prayer for All People is what it's called. Now, this one is not too bad of a name. Y'all know how I am with these cult names. I'm just like, you're doing too much. This one is, it's a bit, you know, it's better compared to what we've had in the past. I think we just had the something 10 commandments one. Oh my goodness, these names just like make me fall asleep. But the House of Prayer for All People, right? Wasn't too bad. This name was really welcoming, really holy. She even slapped a big old cross on the front of the house, like it was some kind of like legit church. And people started coming in. People from the neighborhood, broken families, desperate parents who had, you know, children that just would not listen to them. Anna's like, hey, bring them over here. Bring them over here. I can discipline these children. I know what to do, right? Bring them here. I'm speaking directly to the Lord. So who better to raise your children for you, right? And these quote unquote desperate parents decided that this would be the best choice for their children. So they handed them over. She had this way of making people feel seen, right? She'll tell them God brought you here for a reason, and people believed her. They wanted healing. They wanted to feel special. They wanted a purpose, and she would make them feel chosen. That's pretty much the borderline here, right? I tell you guys how this whole thing is very much centered on exceptionalism, right? A lot of these religions or relationships with deities are centered on exceptionalism. I'm the one that can speak to a spiritual being. I see spiritual beings. I communicate with the other world. No, you don't. The brain is just very capable of a lot of things. Anyway, you'd pretty much think that this would be a sanctuary house, home for people to maybe rehabilitate themselves. That's pretty much what it's being advertised as at this point, right? But all she was really doing was setting up her own little kingdom where she was the queen, the judge, and executioner. She takes these verses from the Bible to justify everything that she's doing. And if you even thought about questioning her, well, y'all already know how that goes. You were labeled a sinner, the devil, or even worse, she would tell people that you were possessed by demons. Now, everyone is ostracizing you. No one wants to talk to you. Obviously, you should not be associating with demons, right? They're not going to want to talk to you or be around you or anything like that. So obviously, this is a form of abuse. It's isolation. So this place was, again, like I said, front for a church, a place, you know, that was supposed to be a sanctuary for these people. Now, this place had no outside world connection whatsoever. Once you were in, you were in. No TV, no radio, no outside visitors, no phones, nothing. Anna ran it like a prison camp. You either obeyed or suffered. Those are the only two options, right? Now, this house we're talking about, again, is a storefront for a church, right? It looks very much holy. There's a cross on the front. It's very churchy. Everyone is holy. Everyone is worshiping, blah, blah, blah. No one is thinking twice about this, right? Now, on the inside, there's no contact to the outside world. So the people that are in that house have no contact to anybody else outside of it. No TV, no radio, no visitors, no phones, nothing. Anna ran it like a prison camp. She ran that place like a prison camp, and no one was safe from her. You cannot disobey her. You either obeyed or you suffered. Nothing else. And a lot of this pretty much was, you know, non-negotiable. There was no way for you to kind of talk your way out of it. Don't worry about it. Now, let's talk about the ones who really carried the weight of this nightmare, the children. This part right here is a bit rough, so listener discretion is advised already. One of the most heartbreaking stories is that of Katonya Jackson, baby girl. She was a toddler, barely 3 years old, and still rocking in diapers, still trying to figure out how to string full sentences together. But instead of being hugged, rocked to sleep, and hearing lullabies at night, she was being starved, beaten, She was being whipped and locked away like she was some kind of monster. She was locked in a closet. And when I say closet, I'm not talking like a full walk-in closet. This is like a cupboard, okay? So this three-year-old was put in there for long periods of time. Her brother, John Neal, later stood in a courtroom and painted the picture of what Katanya went through. He remembered that his little sister was locked up in a closet, in a dark closet, like I told you guys, for hours at a time, maybe sometimes days, no food, no water, all because she's a three-year-old and she cried or disobeyed something that Anna asked her to do. And Anna pretty much labeled her possessed and a child of Satan. So that gave her the leeway to continue doing what she did to this child. And you guys, after Katanya died, after her tiny body finally gave up, John said Anna made all of the kids kneel around her lifeless body. She forced them to pray over her, claiming her death was a victory over evil. John testified that years later, even as a grown man, he couldn't shake that experience. He said every time he closed his eyes, he saw her face. He cried out of guilt at the courtroom. He was just very emotional about it. So just, you know, it took him a lot to repeat that experience that he had. And Katanya was not the only child that Anna did this to, right? Another little boy, Min Harper, he was about 8 years old, and he faced the same kind of treatment from Anna. Emin had epilepsy. Now, we know today that epilepsy is a medical condition, right? Right? It's 2025. We know that, right? Okay. So epilepsy is treatable with medicine, therapy, proper care. It's manageable. It's 2025, right? We don't think epilepsy is a demonic attack anymore. We shouldn't think that. I don't know why we're still believing in these things. Anyway, in Anna's twisted world, she called his seizures demonic attacks. Instead of taking him to a doctor, she isolated him, starved him, and made him believe that he was cursed. Witnesses said that they watched Emin wither away, skin stretched over his bones until his little body finally gave out. He died alone, scared, and untreated. I know, guys, it's a bit heavy. I'm kind of trying to run through it so we're not, you know, sticking to the details too much. It's really hard to think about how innocent children are, you know, reliant on you to provide for them food, shelter, water, right? It's not like, you know, they can do it themselves. They just don't want to. They quite literally can't. And they're relying on you to keep their bodies going. But you are just so full of yourself, right? You are this messenger from God that you are able to watch a child wither away. Like, do you know how excruciating the pain of starvation is? Like, period pains are not as bad, okay? Like, it's just for you to wither away over time because starving, it's not a joke. It's not a joke. That process takes at least weeks. That process takes a long time for your body to run out of resources. It's quite literally trying to keep you alive while all of that is happening. So it's using your fat. It's using all of your stored nutrients. You are in so much pain. It's ridiculous. I don't know. I don't know if we can ever come to a time where we realize how these belief systems are not doing anything for you but setting society backwards, right? I don't see the need for it. I don't see why people think it's okay to reverence someone that just comes out of nowhere and says, I'm a Messiah. I'm talking to God. We are a society of people now that just will see that and say nothing. Full-grown adults with fully formed brains are walking in and out of therapist offices, right? Talking about their hallucinations with this God, talking about the conversations, the prayers that they're having with this God, right? But for some reason, but because you're naming some kind of mainstream religion or the other, everyone just kind of looks the other way, right? Instead of drawing those lines and saying, well, your symptoms kind of sound like this other patient that said nothing about a religion, right? No, we don't say that. Anyway, Anna did not stop there. According to court records, she had a long history of taking in kids, some whose families did not report them missing. Parents would drop their troubled kids off at the house of prayer, hoping that Anna would pray the bad out of these children. And usually when these children come up missing, somehow they just don't pay attention to it. They don't send like alerts out or anything. They just kind of move on with their lives. So this went on for a long time. Some survivors said that they remembered other children coming in and then disappearing into thin air, right? Just out of nowhere, the children just don't show back up. You don't see them again because Anna has killed them, literally. Okay, she's just having a swell time starving children to death, beating them to death, right? And God is right there, whoever she's conjuring, and also getting messages from God. Okay, some kids were never documented, no birth certificate, no school records, just pretty much like they never existed. One woman who lived in the house of prayers as a teenager told police as she remembers Anna quietly getting rid of kids who could not be saved. To this day, nobody knows how many children Anna killed. So yeah, this was pretty much her mission. Anna's beliefs started with Pentecostal beliefs, which if you know, heavy on the fire and brimstones. They're very much concerned with the doomsday preachings, heavy on spiritual warfare, demons, angels, speaking in tongues, all that stuff. She made up this whole thing where every time a little child or a child does something, crying, zoning out, maybe rocking, you know, little stuff that children do, the normal things that children do, they do weird stuff all the time, even smiling, right, at the wrong time. I don't know when is the right time for a child to smile, but apparently this was proof that they were carrying a demon. She would convince these kids and their parents that she was handpicked by God to purge these demons out of them. And let me tell you, her so-called delivery sessions, they looked more like street fights than delivery sessions. Okay, she was beating the fuck out of these children, and I'm not even joking. I did the trigger warning already. Now I'm gonna be real with y'all. She was beating and fighting these children. Like, I don't know what kind of psychosis is going on here where there are other adults watching this happen, but this is ridiculous. She was hitting them with all kinds of objects, all in the name of cleansing. She would throw water on them, dunk their heads in water, baptize them. Quote unquote, this is waterboarding at this point. Okay, she's waterboarding these children and saying she's cleansing them. She's slapping the living daylight out of them while screaming scripture at them at the top of her lungs. Okay, she's evangelizing, screaming scripture while slapping children. She'd throw water on their faces, dunk their heads like, you know, into like cold water. And all of this was in the name of cleansing. This woman had all of these people in this house so brainwashed that instead of being horrified, these adults stood there nodding their heads like she was doing amazing work here. Some of them even would hold the children down for her, right, to beat them up. She was a mouthpiece for God, so how dare I stop her from fighting and beating children? This woman had everybody in that house so brainwashed that instead of being horrified, these adults stood around nodding their heads like she was doing amazing work, okay? They were commending her for her work. And even sometimes they would hold the children down so she can do this to them, slap them, hit them, waterboard them, all of that. So this was not just like a bystander or like she's threatening my life. No, they were partaking in this. To them, she wasn't just a prophet. She was the mouthpiece of God. And you wouldn't dare question her, apparently, because she used to tell people that they were spiritually cursed if they left. And you guys know that, you know, when people hear the word cursed, especially believers, they start panicking. So that's pretty much what she had on them, that they would be cursed if they left the community. So again, we're back to exceptionalism. We're back to the selfishness. We're back to all about me, 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 me. Some other survivors later explained that Anna kept the house locked down tight, okay? And they couldn't take outsiders in. They couldn't talk to outsiders. They could not talk to anyone outside of the house. They couldn't even go to school. They couldn't get medical care. She told them that the world outside was so satanic, right? And that the world was just condemned and God had chosen only her to lead them to salvation. And somehow that's why people stayed there. She had them convinced that even thinking about leaving would bring hellfire on their souls. Any of the children that tried to speak up to her would get worse punishments. Adults who asked too many questions disappeared or got shunned until they broke down and repented. So yeah, Anna wasn't just a twisted preacher. She built a whole belief system to keep people scared, isolated, and under her thumb. Pretty much a recipe for disaster, right? Because when you believe that your abuser is speaking for God, I mean, I don't know where you think you're going to go for help. Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Right now, while we're talking about the things that happen on the inside of the house, I'm talking the torture, the deprivation, the isolation that happened in the house. This was another really shocking thing that I found out about. I'm talking cold, calculated, just I don't know what was happening with this woman and why people believed her so much, right? So how this whole thing operated was, first thing Anna would do was erase the children, right? She would snatch up their identities, like taking away their birth certificates. She changed their names, gave them biblical names or weird titles like God's Soldier, Daughter of Zion, something like that, right? And that was her way of stripping them of their personality. It's kind of like in the military where they refer to you as male and female, kind of dehumanizing you so you can let go of the outside world a bit. Kind of like that. And then after that, she would shave their heads bald, every last one of them, boys and girls. Okay, it did not matter. She said that their hair carried worldly spirits and that it needed to be removed to cleanse them. But really, it was just another mind game, right? Breaking them down so that they stop seeing themselves as human and start seeing themselves as property of God or of her. Whichever one. Now, talking, laughing, whispering, not allowed. That was a sin in Anna's house. You only spoke when spoken to. And even then, you better watch your tone. Watch what you're saying. You can't cry, even as a baby, even as a child. If you're a crier, Anna does not like that. Right? You're asking for a beating at that point. One of the survivors said that the smallest whimper would have Anna flying across the room with a belt, extension cords, or just a switch because of the cry. And refusing to eat, baby, this was not an option. Either you swallowed the little scraps that she gave you or you starved for days. No in between. Let's not forget about those dark, musty closets I was telling you guys about. Not walk-in closets, small little cupboards, okay? Now, in between, survivors said that they would be locked up in there for days, pitch black. No food, no water, no bathroom. And you'd pretty much be made to stay in there, and you come out so weak, so shaken, and barely able to stand. And eventually when you come out, you're so weak, you're so shaken, you're barely able to stand, and Anna would be right there waiting for you with another punishment. A former member told investigators about a little girl who had an accident, peed on herself because she was too scared to ask to use the bathroom. Instead of letting her clean up, Anna made her wear those clothes for weeks. Okay, she told the whole house not to talk to her, not to look at her, like she was some kind of disease. And y'all, it gets worse. Another child, a boy, 7 or 8, who was forced to sleep in a wooden crate. The crate was for just, I don't know what, I think maybe food or something. And you guys, it gets worse. Okay, we're still using that trigger warning. Listener discretion is still advised. We just talked about the child that peed on herself, and Anna made her walk around in those clothes for weeks and isolated her from the rest of the community. This is a child, okay? I don't know what kind of divine entity is okay with this, but this is not one I want to serve. This is not one I would be wanting to serve anytime soon. Now, we're going to move on to the next child. This was a little boy, 7 or 8, and he was forced to sleep in a wooden crate, a crate, y'all, like a damn animal, like he was a dog or something. Now, Anna told him that the floor was too holy for him to touch, and witnesses said that he cried himself to sleep every night curled up in that box while the other kids were too scared to even make eye contact with him. And then we're gonna talk about these bleach baths that she gave children. Yes, you heard me, bleach. Okay. One of the survivors told police that Anna filled a whole tub with bleach and hot water, scorching water, and would make these children sit in them to cleanse their bodies. And children would come out raw with blisters on their skin. Their eyes were swollen shut, crying in pain. But Anna, she stood there and would do nothing, cross her arms, talking about how God's will has to prevail and how this was God's will, like burning children alive with freaking hot water and bleach. Now, what makes this even sicker, nobody on the outside said a word. These adults were helping her hold these children down in scorching hot water and bleach, okay? So this is not like Anna is doing this on her own. There were other adults partaking in this. Some neighbors later told reporters that they felt something was off with the house. They said that the place gave off bad vibes, quote unquote, that, you know, they would hear screaming at night sometimes, but nobody called the cops. Of course, nobody knocked on the door. Some said that they were too scared to go, and others said that they just wanted to mind their business. And because of this silence, those babies stayed locked up in that house for years, suffered so much torture, so much pain. I can't imagine a child going through that. Even on my worst day, I would not wish that on my enemy. I can't imagine what a clueless child would be thinking in that moment. So yeah, when I say this house was a house of horrors, it was just somewhere that dreams went to die, okay? People in Gainesville heard whispers about, you know, this house, but nothing ever stuck. It was until 2016, almost 30 years later, that a real crack started to show. And the crack started to come from Anna's children, John Neal and Katanya Jackson's older brother. It took decades for the truth to come out. Eventually, I think about over 30 years, this was 2016, was when John Neal, Kanye Jackson's older brother, John carried the weight of his sister's death on his chest since that day because he saw her, right? He prayed over her body. He kind of watched the whole thing happen. He watched her be starved to death and be beaten. So he felt partly responsible for that. The prayers were, you know, over her lifeless body so he could still remember what she looked like when she was dead and pretty much starved to death. But it took him years to find the strength to speak up. Like I said, 30 years later, he finally goes to authorities and interviewed with the sheriff's office. And baby, when I say they started digging, they started digging. They started reaching out to survivors who were in the cult and came out of it. Some of them were scattered all the way through other states. Some of them were in the same state, so they were able to talk to them. And kudos to these people because they stayed and they gave the authorities information that they needed. And the puzzle pieces started falling into place. Now, turns out Anna had been living a whole other life. After Katanya's death, she packed up and vanished like smoke. She bounced from Georgia to Michigan, living under fake names, laying low, like, you know, pretty much on the run. Some reporters even say that she was living like a regular sweet old church lady, smiling at folks, and she had actually become a nurse, a health worker. Now, in 2017, authorities caught up with her in Marietta, Georgia. They arrested her on the spot and extradited her right back to Florida. And let me tell you, Gainesville lit up like wildfire. There were news outlets everywhere. The cult mom got away with it. Headlines were flashing. Survivors, neighbors were coming out. Even people who barely knew her, all watching this woman trying to figure out, what did you do, blah blah blah, how did she stay in this community for so long in plain sight and no one knew? Well, people were pretty much just surprised that something like that happened for so long in their community and they had no clue about it. Prosecutors charged her with first degree murder for Katanya's death, plus aggravated child abuse for what she did to Emin Harper and other survivors who came forward to tell their stories, were also added into the first degree murder charge and abuse charge. I think there was a child neglect charge for a couple of the children there that did not necessarily die. Like, they didn't die, but they also kind of went through the same type of abuse. The courtroom was packed, you guys. Survivors stood up one by one telling their stories, and some of them could barely speak without crying, without breaking down. And I can honestly imagine what that feels like, because, man, just wanting to say something to your abuser, it must have been such a hard thing to do, but also a freeing thing to do. But for Katanya, Emin, they did not get the privilege to do that. These children died off of the pain and suffering that they endured at Anna's hand. Now, Anna responded like Anna. No tears, no crying, no remorse, no apology whatsoever. She does not care. In 2021, she pled no contest. That basically means that she's not admitting guilt, but they have enough evidence to charge her and more than likely find her guilty. It's a legal loophole that feels like a slap on the wrist, right? If you ask me. But the judge did sentence her to 30 years in prison. 30 is not too bad, you know, because she is pushing her 80s. But I would have slapped her with the life in prison. I would have gave her life in prison. I don't see why we stoop to 30 years, but, you know, it's not me. So she'll likely die behind bars because, again, she's pushing her 80s. But is this justice? It's complicated. I don't know if I'll say justice. For some survivors, just seeing her locked up was closure. And for others, the sentence was too little. Too late. Too little. Like, at this point, if you guys are gonna give her 30 years out, just give her life in. Why are you giving her 30? You know what? And this woman has lived over decades, 30 years, 40 years, you know, doing all of those things and still being able to live an amazing life after. I told you guys she was a nurse when they found her. So she had a pretty okay life even after she did those things, you know. So at the end of the day, you know, she did get a 30-year sentence and she is behind bars right now. Her face, her crimes, her evil, it's all out there now, right? We see her for who she is. There's no God talking through you, blah, blah, blah. Now listen, when they locked up the house of prayer, they might have closed up the building, but not the trauma. That trauma is always gonna follow the survivors for a very long time. Experts from the International Cultic Studies Association and trauma counselors across the U.S. have pointed out that Anna's method checked every box for cohesion. This case is a good reminder that a lot of belief systems don't have to stay unchecked. People have a right to believe whatever they believe. Absolutely. But that does not mean we ignore when we see harm happening. Okay? That part I'm always going to check. All right? All right, you guys. Thank you so much for sticking through this one with me. It was a bit heavy, but these stories need to be told. A lot of people are still sitting in this cocoon of let people believe whatever they believe. Sure, that sounds great. Okay, that sounds amazing. It sounds great when we just let people believe whatever they want to believe. But guess what? When people start getting harmed, I can no longer do that. That's when I take my seatbelt off. If you found something meaningful in this episode, please share it. Leave a review. 5 stars only. Thank you very much. I appreciate you. If you are on Apple Podcasts, you should be able to subscribe for an extra episode. Again, you guys, don't forget, episode 20 is going to be the last episode for this season. Okay, so make sure you are sending the podcast to your family members, your friends that haven't listened to the podcast, so they can get familiar with it, so they can binge and follow the podcast, so they can get notifications on when season 2 starts. Okay, guys, I really appreciate y'all. Make sure you guys are following the Instagram page so you can keep up with the pictures that follow with the cases. Yeah, that is all from me, you guys. Thank you so much again for being here. Thank you for being you. Until next time, stay safe, stay alert, and most importantly, don't drink the Kool-Aid. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. It's not that good. It's not that good.